I'm speaking today with State Representative Boris Miles, who represents District 146 in Harris County. Representative, you were sent back to the legislature after having previously served a term in 2007.
You say sent back like it was a punishment.
Well, you won an election, you lost an election, you won an election. What was it like the second time around? How did that compare to the first time?
The actual time spent there was a lot different from the first session. The first session, I played a lot of offense. The second session, we played a lot of defense. And, you know, we were outnumbered, outgunned, out of money. State was out of money. And we spent a lot of time deflecting and playing defense and killing things that we tried to kill as much as we could. But when you're outnumbered and outgunned the way we were, we made sure that they knew that they were in a fight. The Republicans, they know that they were in a fight. We were successful in some ways in getting them to turn on each other and exposing the real issues of how some of these cuts were going to affect the citizens of the state of Texas. So it was a good session all in all, especially for District 146 and for Boris Miles.
So in what way was it a good session?
Well, we were successful in passing our urban ag bills, which was when people thought, why was Boris Miles going, the urban guy?
I'm glad you asked, because I was going to bring that up.
An urban guy going to the, requesting the agriculture committee. And yes, I did request to sit on the agriculture committee. It was not a punishment, as some of your news colleagues wrote. It was a request on my part. Because in the inner cities of Texas, we have something called food deserts. We have something called areas of the inner city where we're not getting enough nutrition, We're not getting the raw fruit and vegetables as we should. You can go to any store in the inner city and you can get a pack of cigarettes, a beer, and some Zigzags, but you can't get a banana or a head of lettuce or some tomatoes or any kind of fresh fruit and vegetables. So it's been going on across the country, and it's been slow to catch on in Texas, and I wanted to make sure that I introduced the great state of Texas to something called urban gardening. That's why I requested to get on the ag committee and was successful in sponsoring three pieces of legislation, one that the governor vetoed, and got not just successful in drafting, but getting them passed, one of which the governor vetoed for lack of money, it was going to allow the citizens of Texas to start putting in urban gardens in the inner city, one that we could use state funding when available, that we can write grants and stuff of that nature from private sector as well as federal government, write grants that are filtered through the state of Texas and provide funding for urban gardens. Two, that coalitions can come together, groups of coalitions can come together, and the ag commissioner and his department will help provide resources, and not only resources but intel and information and assistance for communities to put urban gardens into the inner city.
Has there been anything done on that in this district, 146, that was passed?
Since that was passed, we're getting ready to launch the second one in the Sunnyside area, which is going to be an urban garden in the Sunnyside area, yes.
Okay. So, as you said, there was a lot of defense being played, and a lot of the cuts that were passed in the legislature. Obviously, everyone knows about the public education stuff. We'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of stuff that was, you know, that quite frankly was different ways in which the state government does things to help lower-income folks. And District 146 is one of the poorer districts in the state. So what? Tell me what the effects of the budget are on your district.
You already answered that question. The effects of the budget is going to be tremendous on District 146, seeing as how it is one of the poor districts in the state of Texas. And the state of Texas decided they were going to balance the budget on the backs of the poor and the elderly. I can expect for District 146 to be affected in many ways, from health care to education to you name it, health care, education, and just the mere fact that social programs, the social ills that we have in District 146, are all going to be affected by this session's cuts.
Now, as we speak, we've just come to, I don't know if it's an end point in the battle over the women's health program, where the federal government has told the state of Texas that it will no longer provide funding for that based on the state's attempt to exclude Planned Parenthood from the list of acceptable providers. Again, what is the effect on that going to be in your district? Do you have any faith in the governor's promise to find alternate funding for this?
Let me ask you the last question first. Do I have any faith that the governor's going to find additional funding? No, I do not have any faith that he's going to be trying to find additional funding. How is it going to affect us in 146? Cliff, I want you to imagine and keep in mind that not only is my district one of the poorest districts in the state of Texas, but it's also the highest rate of HIV. And I want you to know that those are young girls that are suffering, and not just as some people say, HIV is the face of white males or black males. It's a lot of young women out there that don't understand what the deadly disease HIV, how it affects them, how they come in contact with them. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago when I sponsored Hip Hop for HIV. I had a Chronicle reporter walking through Sunnyside, through the neighborhood, and she did an interview with one of the young girls in the neighborhood just playing, high school student. And the young lady told her, "I don't worry about contacting HIV because before I lay down with any of my mates, I make them take a shower." Okay? So that right there, the mentality of what we're suffering with in the inner city, in District 146 particularly, the educational aspect that Planned Parenthood was providing, and the training and educational aspect of it that was they were going out and providing, that's going to be missing. The mere fact that kids can walk into Planned Parenthood, or young women can walk into Planned Parenthood and address their bodies and get information about pregnancies as well as STDs, that's going to be missing now. So, am I disappointed that the cuts were made? Yes. Do I think the governor's going to find other ways to find money? No, I don't.
All right, so let's talk about public education then. Again, you know, the top line news is, you know, $5.4 billion cut from public education, but it's, you know, we're only now starting to see what the actual effects of that are, bigger class sizes, so on and so forth. What are the effects? How has this affected your...
Well, again, Clough, District 146, we have several public schools. We have several public schools in District 146, from high schools and elementary alone, as well as a few charter schools. And unfortunately, some of the schools that are in my district are some of the lowest ranking schools and lowest rated schools in the district. Larger classrooms, how's it going to affect? You can answer that. I'm just happy that I was able to defeat HB 400. Was it HB 400 HB 4? HB 400 that made it those classroom size. And HB 400, they wanted permanent large class sizes. I was able to defeat that in a point of order during the session. And it sent the bill all the way back to committee, which it never had time to get back out. So they had to break the bill up in our special sessions, and they were able to get it passed, but a different version. They didn't have the permanent classroom sizes in it, which the bill had before. To answer your question specifically, Cliff, anytime you're going to have 40, 50 kids and one teacher, there's going to be some issues in educating all those kids with one teacher, okay? So that's not good for any school district. You getting ready to say something?
I was gonna just ask as a follow up question. You know, since you talked about some of the schools being low ranking, there's been a lot of attention paid lately to the emphasis on standardized testing, which is where these rankings come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, the Texas Education Administration commissioner Robert Scott has said that he thinks that Texas is sort of gone off the rails on standardized testing, put too much emphasis on it, and gotten away from the purpose of it. What do you think about that?
I think standardized tests, we need some kind of measure to measure if the teachers are teaching, if the kids are learning. I don't believe that we should be teaching the test, though. I've been in classrooms, and I feel like the entire session, the entire teaching time is being just to teach the test. I don't think that's conducive to an education. When we were coming up, I don't know if you're a Texan or not, but I'm a native Texan, and Kia, you're a native Texan. We had one standardized test per year, and we didn't even have it every year. We had it in certain grade levels.
I would The Iowa test.
We didn't have that. And shit, we came out just fine. But I think in today's time, there does need to be some type of gauge on if the teachers are actually teaching, if the kids are actually learning. Do we need to spend time focusing the entire curriculum on teaching tests? No, I don't think so.
You were also involved in some criminal justice bills in this past session, in particular having to do with rogue police officers in response, you know, in fallout with that awful tape that was released about HPD beating
Chad
up
Holly.
A kid, Chad Holly.
Chad
Holly. Talk to me a little bit about that.
You know, that's I don't have any, that would be a pleasure, Chad, Cliff, to talk about that. Me being a former police officer, I know how rigorous and how nerve wracking and how hard their job can be on emotionally. And I would say to you, Cliff, that first thing I'd like to say is that I know that 98%, 99.9% of the police officers that patrol in HPD are good officers. But I'd also say to you that 1%, there are rogue officers. And that's exactly what they are, rogue officers that don't give a care about anybody's civil rights or civil liberties. And what we saw in that Chad Holly beating were some officers who just that didn't give a shit about a person's civil rights or the civil liberties. They were clearly, in violation of this young man's civil rights, to the point to where I wrote a letter to Eric Holder, the Attorney General, and sent the tape to him. I did that. Sent the tape to him and to Eric Holder, and filed 3 pieces of legislation for police brutality. And I was a little disappointed that, you know, out of the 3 that I filed, 2 of them got a hearing, 1 of them didn't. And the bills were never picked up on the Senate side. Nobody ever picked those bills up on the Senate side. I wonder why. And I can tell you that we had a lot of support. Even the mayor supported 2 of the bills. The mayor supported 2 of the bills that we wrote and were in support of them. And it just amazes me that the police union, who are very good friends of mine, some of them are old colleagues of mine, old classmates of mine from Sam Houston, it amazes me that their lobbying team is so strong, and they really are, and that they, you know, the uniform is the blue line that we always speak of in law enforcement. It's a strong fraternity, okay? Understand that. But some of the brothers in there also understand that there are some rogue officers that need to be dealt with, and they respect the fact that I authored the legislation, they understood the legislation, they just couldn't support the legislation. But they do understand that there are some officers within our ranks, within their ranks, that need to be dealt with, need to be handled, and that what they saw on tape was clearly not the way that they should be protecting the citizens of the city of Houston.
One issue that came up during the session was the Sanctuary Cities legislation, which Governor Perry deemed an emergency, which essentially was the purpose of the bill was to prevent cities and counties and other entities like that from enacting policies that would forbid their law enforcement agencies from inquiring about somebody's immigration status. Essentially, for, you know, allowing any municipality to, you know, become immigration officers. You know, speaking as someone who was a police officer, you know, What do you think about that?
What aspect of it, Cliff? What aspect of it?
Do you think that that's an appropriate thing for police forces to be doing?
I think that we should be riding down the street and asking people for their immigration papers.
Yeah.
No. I think if we come in contact with a criminal element that we suspect that they may not be a citizen, that at that point it should be asked. Do I think a police officer has the right to drive down the street and say, hey, let me see your immigration papers? But no probable cause? No, I don't. But if we come in contact, and that's something that needs to be done in law enforcement, because you don't know. Because the threat of endangerment from an immigrant who knows he can commit a crime and run back across the border is very high. And as a law enforcement officer, I want to know that. But do I think I have the right as a law enforcement to ride down the street and say, let me see your immigration papers? No.
Since you mentioned the mayor in connection to the bills you filed earlier, mm-hmm. Mayor Parker has also been talking lately about getting some legislation passed to enable the city to deal with some issues of its pensions for police, fire, and municipal employees.
You're not going to go there on me, are you, brother?
In particular, the firefighters. Since
I won't be supporting any legislation to break up the pensions.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Obviously, this session was also about redistricting.
Yeah.
And that you know, there's still many chapters to be written in that saga.
And let me regress for a minute.
Okay.
The mayor's a friend of mine. Okay. Everybody knows that. I was a big supporter of the mayor's. I still am. All right. So let me make that very clear. My wife's my wife. I love her to death. And you know, that's the mother of my child. I don't agree with everything my wife said. Okay. That doesn't mean I'm going to divorce her because I don't agree with something she said. I'm not going to divorce my mayor because I don't agree with her idea on how to handle a pension. I will not be supporting any legislation that's going to break up the public employees' unions or the pensions.
Okay. Is there anything that you would support that the city is likely to propose regarding pensions?
I don't know. I have to see it.
All right.
You're not going to paint me an album, bro.
All right. Fair enough. So let's talk about redistricting.
Let's talk about redistricting.
One of the interesting things that I noted during the redistricting saga was that after the initial interim maps came out from the San Antonio court, these were maps that were a lot more favorable to the Democrats as a whole, but there were some objections raised by African-American legislators, primarily in Harris County and in Dallas County, over the makeup of some of their districts. They were complaining that, you know, their neighborhoods were being broken up. Talk to me a little bit about that.
We weren't complaining our neighborhoods were being broken up. I guess we were. But we're complaining the fact that we're not going to sacrifice historical black districts under the federal government, which the federal government granted us. We're not going to sacrifice those historical black districts, African-American districts, to enhance so-called Democratic numbers. Okay? Before I was a Democrat or Republican or whatever, you know, before I took on any title as a Democrat, I was an African-American. Okay? And I don't believe that we should have to sacrifice our districts to so-called enhance Democratic numbers. So that was the issue. Especially when nobody came to us and asked us about it. Nobody sat down in the meeting and said, look, this is what we want to propose. They just did it. As if we were supposed to just lay down and take the fucking. And we didn't take the fucking. I'm sorry, Kier. Maybe we're supposed to just lay down and take the fucking, and we weren't going to do that.
All right. Were those issues addressed in the current interim map? Mm-hmm.
We're okay now.
And do you believe that going forward, it is possible to address both of the issues of ensuring that the other...
Come on, club. Let's not kid each other.
I just want to be clear.
We can sit down in a room and work anything out.
All right.
Okay, but the two parties have to be willing to sit down in a room and just work it out. But when one party goes behind another party's back and doesn't tell them what the other party's going to do and just goes out and does it and thinks they're just going to lay down and take it, then you got a problem.
All right.
But yeah, in the future, can things be worked out? You know, do we recognize that we're also African-Americans and Democrats and we want to work for the betterment of both? Easily. It could be done. But don't try to dick us on the back room and then, you know, and throw a rock and not shake your hand. Come on, man. We ain't stupid.
Redistricting is always a hard thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
do you think that the proposal that Jeff Wentworth and the Senate has raised for an independent redistricting commission, which in his case is just about Congress, since that wouldn't require a congressional amendment, do you think that's a good idea?
I don't know. I don't know all the details. And if I don't know all the details, I can't comment on it.
All right.
I don't know all the details. I'm sorry.
What will your priorities be in the next legislative session if you are returned to office?
If?
Well, there is an election. You never know what can happen.
When we return to office?
When?
When we return to office, our priorities will be our police brutality bills. We will try to bring back our urban ag bill, the one that the governor vetoed. I find funding for more additional funding for that. I will try to find a senator on the other side to help me push the police brutality bills, and also try to find and restructure some of the financing that was done on this last session, where some of the cuts were made, as well as to reorganize my district and restructure the district and take back a few of the precincts that I lost on the Republican rule house.
And, you know, do you see any prospect for doing stuff that will raise revenue in the next legislative session?
You know my slogan, Clough, keep the faith, keep the fight, together we win. I got to keep the faith. So, yes, do I see? I hope it's all right because I keep the faith.
All right.
I'm always going to keep the fight.
This election will be the fourth consecutive one in which you have faced former Representative Al Edwards for this seat. When people go to vote this time...
For the seat that I hold.
For the seat that you hold. For the seat that you hold. When people go to vote this time, why should they vote to, you know, to break the alternate, you know, it's been you win Club. One, he wins one. Why should they vote?
We've got two. Let's make it very clear. The score is 2-1.
The score is 2-1.
Okay. And this is a 4.
Why should they vote to make it 3-1?
We've done the work, Clough. We've done the work. We've put the work in. The work is evident. I've been available to my community. I've been a voice for my community. I've been a fighter for my community. And I've represented them respectfully. And, you know, I have not sold out. I did not. I've never sold my community out. I've always been the fighter for. No one controls me, as my Republican friends found out. No one is in control of Boris Miles. He don't laugh unless he likes, unless it's funny to him. I don't dance unless I like the music. Okay, I'm an independent thinker, independent person. The only person that controls me is the district and the people of 146.
All right, Representative Boris Miles. Thank you very much for talking to me today.